From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. And every week we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective on the show, which means a balance in body, mind, and spirit, raising consciousness on all planes in order to find more balance and a sense of well-being and greater happiness in our lives. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask on this show is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? So, like I said, we deal with a lot of issues, but before we get into today's topic, I want to acknowledge my sponsor, the Rainbow Mobile Notary Services. Now, in the light of recent events around something like Terry Schiavo's situation, as a nation, we all recently witnessed the unfortunate events and circumstances surrounding her death. Each day, hundreds of individuals face difficult life-altering decisions that are not properly prepared. Don't let this happen to you. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services help. We all tend to avoid stressful, emotional, physical, and financially charged issues and convince ourselves it's never going to happen to me or I have plenty of time. But for your own peace of mind and for the well-being of those you love, don't wait or procrastinate. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Service assist you with living wills, trusts, estate planning, medical power of attorneys, and much more. Plan now. Prevent problems later, especially dealing, as we know, with the medical power of attorneys. Now, they can come to you, your home, your office, or wherever you set up an appointment, even a hospital room, to notarize very important papers that will put your mind at ease and the minds of your loved ones at ease. So you can call Rainbow Mobile Notary Services at 480-518-2090. That's 480-518-2090. Or you can visit their website for more information at www.rainbowprof.com. That's rainbowprof as in professional, P-R-O-F.com. So remember to take care of business, and that's what this show is about, is taking care of business so that we have peace of mind and a sense of balance. So I want to thank Charles King and his company, Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, for supporting the show. Now, today we're going to be doing a show that I've done before in terms of the topic, in terms of the issues around intimacy. The title of today's show is Creating More Intimacy in Your Life. And I will be having a guest on today. His name is Peter Kane, and I'll be introducing him in a minute. And I remind my listeners, whether you're listening online via the Internet or whether you're listening on your radio in Phoenix, the call-in number is 480-949-1310. That's 480 area code. 949-1310. There's an article that was in the paper this week that when I read it, you probably will start wondering, what does this have to do with intimacy? I've been sharing this with everyone because it's such a powerful little thing. It's just a few paragraphs. It's something that took place in Ethiopia, and I got this out of the LA Times about a week ago. A 12-year-old girl who was abducted and beaten by 7 men trying to force her into a marriage was found being guarded by 3 lions who apparently chased off her captives, a policeman said. She was beaten repeatedly before she was found June 9th by police and relatives on the outskirts of Beit Janet, about 350 miles southwest of Addis Ababa, the capital. She had been guarded by the lions for about half a day, Sergeant Wandimo Widahu said. They stood guard until we found her, and then they just left her like a gift and went back into the forest, Wandimo said. Talahun Kasa, a local government official, corroborated Wandimu's version of events. I get chills every time I read this. I mean, to me, this is about our connection with nature, our connection with all beings on the planet, whether they be four-legged, two-legged, or winged. There is a connection that we all have, and I believe we live in a society that has gotten so far away from respect and honoring that connection. And that's how I get from that to intimacy. Those lions demonstrated what it is to connect with our innocence. They understood the innocence of that child. They understood that it was helpless and needed protection. They understood it was their role. And they also understood that the people coming to get her were people that loved her. And when that happened, it was time for them to leave. They had done their job, and it was time to move on. And that consciousness should not, I mean, this was just a little blurb in the paper when other things so much more horrible, and it reminds us about how chaotic the world is, get pages and pages of stuff, and I think it was worth restating, especially in the light of intimacy. Now, on my website, tellthetruthfaster.com, I have some articles that I've written, and one which I've quoted a number of times before is called Intimacy in Relationships. I'm just going to read the first paragraph or two, and then we're going to get right into my guest today and a more in-depth discussion of what intimacy is about. So the first two paragraphs of my article reads, "Intimacy is not necessarily about having a mate, as much as it is about speaking the truth in all your relationships so as to eliminate any barriers to love and understanding. To tell the truth faster to yourself, God, or to whatever you define as your higher power, to another person when appropriate, is the quickest way I know to achieve intimacy in our lives. I define intimacy as an expression of our natural desire for connection. This is the working definition I use in an intensive seminar I lead on intimacy. The key words in this definition are natural and connection. The most natural and intimate connection any of us have ever had was when we were connected to our mothers through our umbilical cord in the womb. From the moment this is cut, we spend the rest of our lives searching for that connection again. At the same time, we are forced to deal with the guilt and shame we have been taught to feel about for that desire for that much connection. Emotional traumas, abuse, and our perception of abandonment and loss all help us build protective barriers that only serve to keep us disconnected. Our fear of connection or intimacy creates a constant sense of separation that becomes very familiar. Familiarity tricks us into thinking that we are safe when separate or disconnected. So we create patterns in behaviors and relationships that keep us, quote-unquote, safe, but very alone and often unhappy and unfulfilled." Now, my guest today, Peter Kane, is somebody that I've actually known, I think, since around 1987 or 88, when I started attending workshops on relationships called the Loving Relationships Training, founded by Sandra Ray and Bob Mandel. And Peter was actually one of the trainers, a very young guy at the time who had already understood and started devoting his time to the issues of healing relationships and being a presence and an inspiration for people. He's not just someone that teaches it, but I believe even though our contacts have been sporadic over the years, I believe he's somebody that's not just teaching it, but somebody who's living it. So, Peter, welcome you again to the show. You were one of my first guests going back about 3 years. Welcome back to the show.
That's right, Stuart. Thanks for having me again.
Yes. What else do you want to say about yourself in terms of introduction? Because I usually like to give my guests that opportunity.
Well, this all started for me when I was 19 and my father died and the whole pot got stirred for me. So that was in 1977. So basically, I shifted my studies to various accelerated psychology stuff to accelerate my own healing at that time. And I've been in private practice since 1979 doing that, and was Sandra Ray's partner through the 80s, started doing that from 80 to 90.
Can I ask you to speak a little louder?
Still basically do various forms of the same work, deep relationship work. A lot of my work is organized around intimacy right now. I am in the process of searching for a publisher for a book about sexuality and intimacy. So, yeah, I live this, and the way I think of intimacy is to quickly also expand it to stories like the one you told about the lions and the girl, even, but to just talk about that intimacy is about being seen by everyone, and, you know, to link it back to that old phrase, tell the truth faster, expressing yourself and showing people what you want or even sometimes what you don't want to be seen for is part of that connection.
Say that again a little bit louder because I'm having difficulty hearing our connection.
Okay, hold on a second. You got softer too once you switched to me.
That's
I was just
better,
checking my
you.
Phone to see if I could turn the volume up, but I'll just, how's that there right now?
That's better, thank
That's
you.
A little better. I'm sorry. Well, I hope the listeners heard that, but let's move on.
Intimacy is about being able to hear
volume.
One another, isn't it?
You know, I had something to say back to the lions also. It's obvious in that story that the girl was probably screaming and bleeding. So that was a pretty easy communication for, you know, a person to hear. And obviously the lions were intelligent enough to hear it. And likewise, when the safe people approached, that was a communication, you know, able to hear, and the lions left. So, fortunately, most of us don't have that dire of a time making sure that our words are heard and our truth is expressed and we're seen. But on the other hand, we have these easy skills called language, and we don't use them. So basically, deep relationship work does begin by expressing what you'd like to be seen for and what your fears of being seen are, and just starting to get that going. You've probably said it on your show over the years, but another one of our phrases from the 80s was, put your worst foot forward.
Right.
And that's a little slanted towards that scary side. It's important to note that putting your best foot forward is also part of intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just expressing what you want in your connection with someone. Now, those sentences make a lot of sense on a first or third date, but the process applies to everyday contact.
Mm-hmm.
The more we let people know who we are, the more intimacy we're going to have.
Right.
So, like, I have some pretty good intimate relationships at the gym with the trainers or the other people in the classes I do. You know, technically we could call that superficial, but on the other hand, it's only me. It's only if I were to not be sharing details or truths that it's superficial. So I have the skills to expand that every day I go into the gym and make those relationships more meaningful and rewarding. That's what community is about.
Mm-hmm. So basically, again, since we come from a very similar background, that when we're talking about relationships, we're not just talking about a primary relationship with a partner, with a husband, wife, lover, or whatever. We're really talking about carrying this consciousness throughout our life in all the contacts we make, even if it's a momentary contact or whether it's something ongoing like with the people at the gym with you, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Now, on the other hand, we have an hour today, so we should probably get to the stuff people really, really are most invested in. So that, yeah, that might be partnerships or the lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
But at least as an introduction, these same principles apply to everything.
Right. Now, you wrote an article in Evergreen Magazine.
Yeah, Evergreen Monthly.
Call, where you really kind of outline the very basics of what you're talking about. And the first thing that I know you get into in here has to do with being present. So what do you mean by being present? And talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, being present is another word that fits into what we've said thus far. You have to be with yourself to open up. So just being present with yourself and what you're feeling is actually the huge, big first step. And then, you know, actually for our purposes today, I'll just leave it right there. You know, every personal growth endeavor, every book we read, every psychological process or psychotherapy we partake in is actually going to increase our ability to be present.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, first step is to know what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I will say one more thing about that. I was recently coaching one of my teenage sons on his dating process. Miraculously enough, he actually listens halfway. and it just reminded me of something that I've taught adults always, is when in doubt, start with communicating how you feel about communicating.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, you know, we're on in some intimate process and we've got a place we want to take it. So easy metaphors are early dating or maybe mid-older marriage where there's a big conflict about, you know, love, sex, or money that needs to be spoken to. So in either case, it would be sort of like knowing what you feel and then saying, you know, honey, I am afraid to talk to you about our money situation. Even if you just start with that, it's an easier bridge than just having honey come home and say, look, this money thing makes me feel this way. If we just start by talking about how we feel about talking about it, we roll into it more smoothly, we'll get our courage up better, mm-hmm. and we'll also, actually, that'll be a minor help towards getting a less defensive response.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, again, with the dating example with my son, the thing I like to say there is just tell the girl how you feel about telling her how you feel.
Right.
And then that ice is broken.
You can talk about how you feel.
And pretty soon you can be in a conversation discussing needs and goals of the relationship, you know. I wanted to call you again today, but I was worried about it because I wasn't sure if you'd want to talk to me 2 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon, of course, then that gives the other person an opportunity to share in that intimacy. Then they can say, well, no, I mean, we're going out. That's what the kids call it nowadays. It's not going steady anymore. They go out. No, we're going out, you know. Dude, I expect to talk to you every day or else you're going to get dumped, you know, or whatever. So that's another interesting principle I just wove in there is that we're never in this alone. If we take the risk of communicating our experience, the other person actually jumps in fairly quickly and helps build the puzzle with us.
Well, I think what you're saying also, which I agree with, is if you take the risk, it makes it safer for someone else to take the risk.
Absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And you're creating a safe environment. You're laying the foundation for the expectations of the integrity of the relationship.
Right. And it's worth noting that a term I've used at that point before a lot is emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
This is how people get more emotionally intelligent, is by practice. So very often, let's switch to a marriage example. My female clients might stereotypically feel that they can address feelings better than their partners or husbands.
Mm-hmm.
But their not expressing it is only enabling the whole thing to stay stuck.
Right.
So if they come to counseling, even if it's not couples counseling, and they get some impetus to go forward in a more intimate direction and reveal more and speak up more and such, then, in essence, they're training themselves. Their partner jumps in, and pretty soon the couple is evolving in increased emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the title of my show, Tell the Truth Faster, of course, came to me through the LRT, the Loving Relationships Training, and it's been my mantra since. And that's basically what you're speaking of here, is speaking your truth faster, or at least getting more in touch with it as fast as you can, and finding out what the barriers are to a deeper wisdom and a deeper knowing, so that you can communicate more directly and more honesty. So I want to quote here from your article that kind of reinforces what we're saying. Sharing truthful information is an obvious and vital part, but intimacy deepens most when we are emotionally and energetically present. And that comes with what we're saying from speaking your truth. And I like what you did in terms of, you know, if you don't know where to start, start with where you are. And if where you are is, I'm real nervous about having this conversation with you, then at least it gets that out of the way, and the person listening to you knows that it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really excellent. You know, and I think these things may sound very simple, but what people tend not to do is the simplest. You know, and it usually gets them caught up in a whole spiraling of past patterns. Now, how do, you know, we talked about earlier the issues of patterns and traumas that get in the way of some of this stuff. And I know you said something along the lines, when I wasn't able to hear you real clearly, that some of our difficulties in life and old patterns and behaviors and belief systems and stuff sometimes are what's in the way, and putting your worst foot forward is important, but putting your best foot forward is also important. So how do you get from putting your worst foot forward to putting your best foot forward?
Well, just understand that it's not just negative stuff that needs to be healed and revealed to get more intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's also just sharing hopes and dreams and positive feelings. So, you know, perhaps we can just tell the audience later how to find that article I wrote recently, but I have some exercises in it. The magazine also actually calls it a mini retreat, so it's basically
right.
An article with processes in it. In this first section that we're sort of discussing now about being present, and I just have a process in there where you just share what you're afraid of someone to see about you, and then also what you'd love for someone to see about you.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trained to withhold both. And so remembering that there's the positive side too, and, you know, putting our best foot forward also is, a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to increase intimacy. And, you know, just those fears of being conceited and arrogant need to be kind of looked at and set aside, and a balance struck to revealing, you know, the good stuff too, without being paranoid about exactly how true it is.
Right.
You know, we're always afraid that someone's going to question it, so we, you know, hold it back. But in the end, we've held back our hopes and our dreams and some of the positive energy that is true about us.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, I know we've jumped ahead to actually a part of what you call building acknowledgement in part three of your article.
Well,
but I also know that there are things that get in our way of doing that, and that's your second part, which is protection that you
right.
talk about. And I know I also mentioned it in that paragraph that I read from my article. Talk a little bit more about where our protection devices start and how most of us use it in a way that usually limits intimacy for us.
Right. Well, first let me say that my experience is that the older words for protection were resistance, avoidance, you know, even denial, disassociation. Basically, as these better, more accelerated forms of psychology evolved in the 70s and 80s, the teachers were making the clients and the students wrong for basically holding back and being in avoidance or defense or resistance. And I think the word of protection, which I jumped toward in just about 1990, I've replaced all those words with the term protection because it's a much more respectful, accurate word as to what's happening when we, you know, so back to intimacy, when we avoid sharing ourselves with someone. I mean, why do we do that? Because we're afraid of being hurt, mm-hmm. et cetera. And so just noting that as a protection issue gives respect and credence to the reason we're protecting ourselves, which is that we were hurt once mm-hmm. or twice. And so basically just understanding that protection is normal and real and needs to be addressed and not made wrong is really a very, very important first step. And then that said, where does protection come from? Basically every place. It comes from birth trauma. You know, as you know, that's one of yours and my specialties is pre- and perinatal psychology. Mm-hmm. It comes from feeling neglected and that our needs weren't important, whether that came from being an infant or toddler or youth. It comes from learning how to cross the street. That's mm-hmm. a good example where to teach that protection is important. It is necessary to protect ourselves in the physical universe. Mm-hmm. There is real live consequences and rules to be learned. Then on the other, on that more emotional side, some of those rules are, you know, the dysfunctional ones, how to avoid being hurt by the cranky mother or father. So a lot of our emotional distance in relationships does come from, you know, an emotional withdrawal that is protection-based. It's another key word would be observation or hiding or mm-hmm. hermiting. Basically, the problem with intimacy is that people are protecting themselves, living in isolation so that they won't be hurt. So the first step is to identify that made sense once, and it might not be necessary in these current situations.
Right. In other words, to really acknowledge, I mean, I do this often with clients who really need to be acknowledged for the fact that they developed these tools and techniques to survive some pretty horrible situations because their life urges were so strong and they were, in a sense, taking good care of themselves, and that those tools and techniques, while they worked at that time for a very valid reason, may be the very things that are working against them now. And I believe that's what you're saying.
Right. Now, of course, we should also do plenty of shows about abuse and needing to get the heck away from dangerous or, you know, emotionally toxic things.
Right, and people.
But in the context that we're talking today, and it is super common, we have this old habit of numbing and withdrawing to protect or working hard and therefore too hard to protect. Maybe I should clarify, I just jumped to another kind of example where you could be a workaholic to protect yourself from poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're working unnecessarily, it's just going to have that negative effect of not leaving you enough time to be intimate in the personal realms.
Right.
So
any addiction and
even doing good
behavior.
And working hard and being extroverted are forms of protection.
Mm-hmm.
To go out and procure security and abundance. That's actually a form of protection that erodes intimacy as well, because it's not real contact.
Mm-hmm.
So by understanding that by taking a look at the current situation, if it is, you know, safe to be intimate, then it's a question of stepping aside from some of these old habits of just unconsciously and habitually protecting, numbing, and withdrawing.
Well, how do you help people actually identify what these old habits are?
Well, the tool that has been in my practice since 1990 that has really informed this way of the most is voice dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Helen Sidra-Stone's work. It's quite available. And that means identifying these energies and dialoguing with them one self at a time for the purpose of getting that consciousness, clarity, and space to break them as a habit. And then they become resources.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, we don't want the withdrawn, highly observant person that takes everything in at a cocktail party to decide if the people are okay or safe. We don't want that person to get rid of their observant tendency, because that's going to be healthy. You need that tendency to cross the street or to observe if someone is not trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do want is for it to become a less habitual part of their skill set so that they can choose it consciously as needed, and then when appropriate also do some of these other things like we were talking about taking risks and sharing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So voice dialogue has given me a lot of ways to help people do that.
If I understand what you mean by voice dialogue, and I, you know, I certainly have, you know, learned about it, you know, to a certain extent, it feels to me similar to like a lot of my old Gestalt work, where you're actually personifying that mindset and having conversation with it, and conversation means saying what you need to it and hearing what it's actually speaking back to you.
Well, that's the Gestalt way. I sort of have always had the feeling in my training that voice dialogue wouldn't exist without Gestalt, but I think a better statement is that voice dialogue and Gestalt would not have evolved probably without Jungian psychotherapy and Jung's work. Voice dialogue is actually different than that Gestalt-based way. I do that, too. I'm training that, too. Voice dialogue, the counselor interviews the self, and the selves don't talk to each other, and the client doesn't talk to the selves.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a specific way of helping the client identify the energy and value of each self. And then by doing that, the client just naturally gets better at orchestrating them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few tedious reasons why we discourage having the selves talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
The most simple description is because it doesn't really help the client become any more aware of them, and it just kind of digresses into that kind of power struggle thing. So, but yes, voice dialogue as a term sounds like something that a lot of therapists do. It's worth just using it as a specific description of this very specific communication tool created by Helen Sidra-Stone. But it is, you know, there's a lot of like, for example, technically voice dialogue is shadow work,
mm-hmm.
or maybe not technically, generally. There's other forms of shadow work.
Right.
You know, shadow work meaning just in connecting with the side you're afraid of or the side you've gotten rid of.
Right.
So it doesn't always mean big, dark, and scary. It just means, you know, the workaholic shadow is their lazy side.
Mm-hmm.
So voice dialogue is about getting in touch with all of it. And the protection thing is very key there, because the way the stones trained me to proceed is you can't really get deep without addressing the protection layers first.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, literally when I first started studying that in the late 80s and early 90s, that was like revolutionary. Like, oh, duh. You know, we go to these group workshops where everything's all about getting intense and emotional and intimate. Well, if the protection self isn't in for that ride, people just go home Monday and revert back to their same old control patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I've taught ever since is I start with how good the control patterns are, how necessary they are, both to deal with the early wounds and the physical universe and bring those all along for the ride. Then the whole thing gets integrated to where then when you're, whether you're confronting your partner or husband, wife about money or more of those early dating scenarios, you have awareness of that control need, and that gives you the consciousness to step aside from it and then choose the intimate direction. Another way of saying that is we talk about intimacy all the time, but we're actually going to help the people better if we work with their non-intimate self also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and understand their good purpose, you know, like we said a bit ago, the initial good purpose, and then move on.
Okay. Getting back into the building acknowledgement part of it, because I know we started touching on it earlier.
Yeah. Well, just FYI, let me interrupt real quick. Earlier, what I meant was more like the fear I have of people seeing me and something I'd love for people to see about me. So, you know, back to that article, I actually did organize that under
mm-hmm.
presence. The building acknowledgement, that's more for the other person, something I like about you.
Right. Well, let's continue with what you just said in terms of the actual exercise you have in part two, you know, being visible and being vulnerable and, you know, something I would like this person to see about me. It's all part of, it's like hiding the stuff you don't want to be seen, but going beyond that to what I'd really like people to see about me, how I want to be seen in the world, how I hide those things, and how I want to stop hiding those things. Which really is about embracing and acknowledging yourself and your own power.
Yep.
Is that correct?
And the word contact is what, you know, I think of as you're saying that. Is, and just to remind people that there's contact there. And if we don't share what we'd like to be seen for, sure, we're humble and, you know, fine, but both sharing our hopes, dreams, and fears is part of real contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another phrase is, what makes us tick?
Right.
You know, if we want to be intimate with someone, God, I hope they know what makes us tick. You know, so how many people, like another place in my book, kind of on another topic, but I say in my book that, you know, ideally, you'd have a handful of friends, a psychotherapist, you know, that all knew every single detail about your life. You know, then maybe a broader group of people that just know what makes you tick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and God, it's amazing the number of people where the only person that knows every single detail is, you know, their husband or wife.
Mm-hmm.
Or even then, not even them.
Right.
But, you know, God, life is so big. I think that most of us have, you know, some in-law issues, some money issues, some sexuality issues. And wouldn't it be nice if not only did we break through and share all those depths with our main partner or with our partner, but if we also had an extended group of really good friends that knew everything our psychotherapist knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that, like I said, you know, maybe another layer where they know most of it or they know just the essence of what makes us tick.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me what that just means is, yes, just what is the emotional motivation in one's life?
Mm-hmm.
What is the old hurdle? What's the current scene that's an expression of that being addressed and resolved? You know, just all that basic stuff. If you hate your parents and are estranged from them, how many people in your life know that? If you're still having money challenges, how many people in your life know that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, really key to the chapter in my book that talks about all that is just called Maintaining an Open System, mm-hmm. which is a fancy systems theory way to talk about this. Living in isolation closes the system down. The system's not open to support. It's less sustainable as a result.
Well, that makes total sense.
Physicists call it entropy.
Call it what?
Physicists call it entropy.
Right.
You know, and I guess the definition is when a system's left to its own, it tends to break down.
Right.
Whereas when a system is open to outside influence, like psychotherapy, it has a more sustainable future.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to open that up and note that, you know, the friends and the community, you know, should be involved.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that people who are so focused on finding the mate, how important it is to lay this foundation of having the kind of relationships you're talking about with people who are not necessarily the erotic and romantic aspect of their lives. You know, it's in a lot of ways, it's the training ground for taking that next step to go even deeper.
Right. Just like I said earlier about building emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Start anywhere and everywhere. It's also worth noting that that leads to an open system where more and more people know that what makes you tick is you want a partner.
Right.
And, you know, people know people.
Mm-hmm.
I've said that to people, like, you know, I'll just butcher or fabricate an example, but I've said similar things. You know, imagine a 30-year-old guy that doesn't want the 45-year-old female friend because he's not interested in having an older lover.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, dude, does she have friends?
Right.
Daughters?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe she has a 25-year-old daughter. You know, maybe she has coworkers. But, hey, maybe she's just a good friend, and that'll give you some healing in the heart that'll make your 30-year-old perfect partner actually like you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so absolutely, it's all a system, and to be part of it and present in it, that's intimacy.
Good. Now, the third part of it, as we started talking about before, is acknowledgement. And you say in your article, acknowledgement in a relationship is a relationship skill that harvests intimacy when practiced regularly. Acknowledging others and ourselves creates positive energy that helps transcend our wounds, low self-esteem, defensiveness, criticism, and fear of intimacy. But it's not just being able to acknowledge, it's also being able to receive acknowledgement, which for many of us is a much more difficult thing. So what do you suggest to people in terms of dealing with the acknowledgement issue on the receiving end of things?
Well, basically just shut up and say thank you, you know, and just try to let it in. I think it's worth noting that what you and I just said thus far, though, still sounds a little superficial as a first cut, because I think the bigger issue is to create a culture of acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for example, when I have a new couple that I'm counseling that, just to be honest, has, like, lots going on, I might actually start them with acknowledgement, even though that's sort of like, you know, just a little thing in a hailstorm. It's still an important thing to get building in the relationship to loosen up those other bigger, colder issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think actually giving acknowledgement is the important first step.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just another, like, culture change. And if we're the one, you know, reading about it or listening to this show, okay, so take it out and start acknowledging people more,
mm-hmm.
all kinds. If you are in a partnership, I'm talking 20 to 40 a day. Who knows? Lots. As many as possible. As many ways as possible. Thank you for doing this. Oh, I like that about you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's really cool that you did this. Oh, you're so funny. And then you can formalize it like it says in my article. You know, just something I appreciate about you is. And do it as an exercise. Ask them, hey, would you be willing to do an exercise with me? And then do it the way it says in my article. Then that, as that culture starts to create that, if it's coming back, then we just, you know, learn to say thank you and let it in.
Well, part of my experience in working with couples also is when they get into a therapy at a certain point, they usually by then they're in crisis mode, and they're so used to the criticisms and the arguments and everything else. And one of the first things I usually have them do to give me a sense of, you know, what the conflicts are about is have each of them individually make a list of the things that they don't like about the relationship, but then also with that a list of the things they do like about the relationship and their partner, and they sit face to face sharing that with one another. And in many instances it helps them remember what got them into the relationship in the first place, and in many other cases it helps the partner comprehend that their significant other is actually does appreciate some things about them, and it's really often, as you say, breaks the ice and allows us to start a dialogue instead of just an arguing session.
That's right. You know? That's right. Absolutely.
So we have about 8 minutes or so left, and I want people, you know, I often have people that email me after the show. They were just too shy to call in. I want people to know how they can get a copy of this article, get in touch with you, find out more about, you know, what you do in terms of your workshops and the work that you do. So tell them a little bit about that.
Well, I'm Peter Kane, K-A-N-E, and I can be found at peterkane.org or rebirthing.com or relationshiptransformations.com. But Peter Kane, K-A-N-E.com is probably the easiest to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you forget that, rebirthing.com finds the same site. The article we've kind of worked from here is in evergreenmonthly.com. And,
is it just an online magazine?
No, it's a Washington State monthly magazine that deals with the psychology to conservation to green politics and such. It's basically the current version of our older, most spiritual magazine here.
Okay.
And there's 30,000 people in Seattle that read it. So there's a nice... It's a nice magazine, and the article is probably listed as Close Call on there. So it's right on their homepage, Close Call, evergreenmonthly.com. The work I do is, same as always, breath work, training breath workers and couples counseling and this voice dialogue. And I do it mostly in Seattle. I have people that travel to me for counseling as well as people, you know, from a pretty broad area that come to see me. I also train breath workers and have a one-month training program, a 10-day training program, weekend training programs. My main relationship intensive these days is called Creating Intimacy. Just similar to the way we've been talking, that's just the container for addressing what's going on in relationships for me, but it's definitely not just about how to acknowledge each other and that part. It's about addressing the deeper wounds that we're protecting and keep us distant.
Mm-hmm. And are all of these done in the Seattle-Redmond area, or are you still doing workshops elsewhere?
I'm still doing workshops elsewhere as needed. I've basically been recovering from marketing since about 1990. So that's good news and bad news. My kids are getting older, and my kids are 18 and 15 now.
Wow, I didn't know what
you meant. So, yeah, isn't that amazing? Stuart has probably, yeah, I guess from the year you mentioned, you know, my oldest son was probably a toddler with his own attendant during the workshop where you must have met me.
Well, one of the LRTs, there was, you know, Meg was in the back of the room nursing. So.
Sure, yeah. Well, Chris goes to college next year.
Oh.
So anyway, I do travel, but and it's not that hard for people to produce for me. You know, they create a group of 20 or 30 people, and it's a nice cottage industry. I intend to get things back on a little bit bigger scale with this book that should come out in the next year or two. So that's what I do, is counsel full-time and teach as it works out. I do events in Seattle about five times a year,
mm-hmm.
and elsewhere, you know, depending upon having a producer that's interested.
Mm-hmm. You do these by yourself or with a partner?
By myself.
Mm-hmm.
By myself. That's a funny thing. I taught with all these other personalities all through the 80s. And, you know, if I can say it with enough levity, I'm recovering from that, too.
I understand.
I have a partner, but she teaches her own stuff, and mm-hmm. I teach my own stuff. And that is a nice balance for me. It actually is just simpler and deeper for me to just, you know, not be balancing the differences between me and my co-facilitators.
Mm-hmm.
For the audience, Stuart got all that in a much funnier way than I made it sound. I was trying to make it sound professional, but when I said personalities, Stuart knew what I meant.
Yes, I did. I also want people to know that I think it was actually back in, I think the first year of my show, and I can tell you actually in a minute, if people want to get more information on rebirthing, which I've talked about many times on the show, or as you're calling it now, breathwork, I know many of us are referring it to a lot of different things, people go to the archives on my website, tellthetruthfaster.com. If you go to the archives and go to August 30th, 2001, that's how long ago it's been, Peter, since you've been on the show. August 30th, 2001, the interview I did with Peter on rebirthing and psychotherapy was the title of it, and how the breath work and psychotherapy, in my own practice, and I know in Peter's, goes hand in hand. You can certainly hear what we both had to say about the breath work and the healing process and psychotherapy.
And yeah, I'd recommend that. I mean, just one word on that. I really would credit this breath work for why Stuart and I know so many deep things about what the heck is really going on.
Mm-hmm.
It basically helps people so deeply that the people who have been trained in it end up very deep relationship counselors,
because
they're addressing the deeper content of what's stuck with people.
Right.
The other less ominous way to make it sound like a good idea is it's just very simple cleansing and leaves people feeling opened and at peace. So it truly is an experiential tool that takes all this stuff deeper and takes people further than talk therapy can. And
Definitely.
So for me, my work is a mixture of that and talk therapy, and that's a great balance.
Right, and that's what I do.
People have both then.
Now, I also want to let people know, if they didn't get a chance to write down Peter's information, if you go to tellthetruthfaster.com, the hyperlink to relationshiptransformations.com is right there. And this show, if you want some people to listen to it, in about 2 weeks will be up on the archives also. And Peter, I know I'm running out of time right now. I really want to thank you. It's been nice to reconnect with you again, as always. And
thank you
very
much.
I really appreciate you taking the time on Saturday.
Great.
So I thank all my listeners for tuning in. This is Stuart Altshuler on Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week.
That I heard of once.